Okay. My name is Dan Walsh. I'm the lead engineer of the SE Linux team. I'm talking about what SE Linux is. As some of you that are using FT3 probably don't even know you have it running on your belt boxes right now. Those of you that went through FC2 know a little bit what SE Linux was like. And it's interesting to see that Michael uses us as an example of what Fedora development was all about. And I remember that period of my life very well. I got to meet a lot of users for the Fedora community, and the number one question that we got was, how do I turn this damn thing off? So now we're trying to change that mindset, and hopefully people don't even know they have it on. And we're going to talk about the differences between what was in FC2 and what's in FC3 and what's coming in the future. But first, let's just talk about what SE Linux is. SE Linux stands for Security Enhanced Linux, but really what SE Linux is it's mandatory access control. What current systems, most Unix systems and most Windows systems are discretionary access control. That means that the discretionary access control means that the controller system is governed by the user, and any program that he runs has the full rights of that user. So it's under the discretion of those applications to do the right thing. So that's where it gets discretion. The user has discretion to set files in any mode. The root process, and root runs under a discretionary access control system, so that the root process has control over any files on the system. So if you run your bind service as root, bind becomes compromised, and that compromise of the entire machine. In a mandatory access control system, the program is controlled by the theory of least privilege. So basically, you give the privileges to the application that runs with the least amount of privileges that it needs to run. So if a user runs Mozilla, you can set up a system where a user starts up the Mozilla application, and the Mozilla application, all it can do is display pages from the web. You can't go on and look at your Etsy shadow file. You can't go on and look at anything on the system. All it's able to do is read web pages and display them on the screen. So you can lock it down to that level. The beauty of this system is that the security of the system is locked down by the administrator, but it actually is even further than that. The security of the system is governed by the people that wrote the software. So you can set up, the system comes with security rules that are written by the OS vendors, and hopefully in the future by application providers. They write the policy. They write that this application is supposed to do this thing. These are the types of access that it needs, and this is what it needs to do. So you incorporate the program's function and trustworthiness into the access control decision. And mainly root compromise. The main goal is root compromises are confined by policy. I've had Colin Walters is one of the users. He's on the desktop team. And he's actually pointed out to me that this isn't totally true. The number one target of hackers on the internet now is not to get root compromises. What they're trying to get is they're trying to get access to accounts on your machines so that they can go spam. Right? So what they want to do, they don't care if it's a user account,
Or to spam from your machine.
Right, well that's what I mean. They want to break into your machine so they can basically forward spam out or just set up your machine as a spam forwarder. So even root compromise isn't the total goal. Okay, what is, the next thing to look at SE Linux is, SE Linux, one of the main theories of SE Linux is every single program in the world is broken. Okay, so that program will become compromised. Okay, there is a way to compromise any program. So just like when you're building a castle, what you want to do in a castle is basically have a series of compartments. So if a compartment in your castle gets invaded into, right, you have further compartments that are isolated. So the break-in is isolated. So, the time I wrote this presentation, Lord of the Rings was also the third one. So I got a couple pictures of the Lord of the Rings and Helm's Deep and all that stuff. But basically, just think of that. Think of a castle. So basically, if my Apache web server gets compromised, the Apache application is compromised. They have full access and control over the Apache application, but what they can't do is attack my bind service. Okay, if I have both running on the same machine, they can't attack my user space. They're locked into the room of the Apache web server. SE Linux was developed over 10 years, and it's probably nearly 30, well, we've been working an additional 3 years, so it's probably like 13 years by NSA. Everybody thinks the NSA is being this big spy organization, and that's where the history is. But another wing of the NSA, one of the goals is to improve the security of the entire United States computer infrastructure. Okay, think of Homeland Security, which is obviously a lot more popular in the last few years. But the idea is to raise the level, raise the bar of all computer systems in the United States. So they have an advanced research group inside of NSA that worked on a thing called the Flask architecture. And they basically came out with the Flask security architecture, which basically takes the kernel, adds all these security checks into it. So every time there's an access control check made, and it calls off the function, says, is it okay for this process to be able to do this thing on this object? It cleanly separates the policy from the enforcement. So there's no rules built into the kernel around access control. That's in a separate process in a separate rules database. Allows fine-grained controls over kernel services. And one of the goals was to make it transparent to the applications. So you don't end up with a SE Linux Apache, or an SE Linux Mozilla, or SE Linux Firefox, okay? This is at a different level. It's totally isolated from the applications. And the goal was to remove the power of root. And this next slide, there's been several machines are on the internet right now. You can go out and look for them, where people give you root accounts on the machines are protected by SE Linux. It's been experimented to basically find out what kind of holes, what do we miss. And those machines are going to watch to see how the hacker will try to break into them and do stuff. So you can get to actually get them. They'll give you a root password, you can log into the machine and try to break it. Why should you use SE Linux? Well, SE Linux courses, kernel enforces mandatory access control policy. As we talked earlier, finds systems and programs to minimum privilege. First time ever the root is being root privileges are being decomposed. A traditional operating system depends on three things. Even though I put them as two slides, two dots. Basically depends on the correctness of the kernel. If the kernel is compromised in either a mandatory access control system or in a discretionary access control system, all bets are off. The second thing, all applications a discretionary access control system relies on is any privileged application. Basically, any application that runs a root, right? You're depending on the security of that. And the third thing is even if the application is totally correct, you're relying on administrators to set up that. You're depending on administrators to set up the configuration of those applications. So if a person comes in and they configure your Apache web server to run as root and have easily broken into, allow it to run certain shell applications, and that's the way the person configures, then it's easily broken into. Okay, so an SE Linux system, again, would depend on the correctness of the kernel, and then we depend just on the security policy configuration. And that security policy is being written by security experts and the application developers. So the people that best understand the application, the way the application is designed to work, and people that understand security, so that they look for certain times applications are written in such a way to give away a little too much security. And there's certain applications that we run that we don't allow certain functionality of that application to actually happen. This is the big. This is, I think, the only slide that says Red Hat on it. We have to make some money, too. But basically, the idea is, where should you run SE Linux? And this picture basically shows that we want to run it everywhere. Where we really want to run it is any machine that touches the internet. Okay, so if you take a machine and put it on the internet, and you're listening on a protocol from the internet, that's where you're going to be attacked. So that's really where you need SE Linux protecting you, basically compartmentalizing any attack. The next step, the demilitarized zone, any of your web service, things like that. Firewall machines, anything that really needs top level security, but I really believe you want it everywhere. So one of the reasons we basically put SE Linux be turned on by default on Fedora Core was to basically get this technology out into the hands of the largest possible number of users. How does SE Linux enforce policy? Every process and every file on the system is tagged by a security context. That the files are tagged with beer extended attributes, so the EXT2, EXT3 file systems. Basically, every file, if you go and look at it, if you do an LS minus Z of a file, you'll see the context of what that file is. This is that I've stored in extended attributes. Every new file gets created, it gets created with a default context, it gets created with a context depending on policy. And the usual way that those files get created is you get the same policy in the directory that you're stored in. But there's rules about, for instance, if the bind application creates a file on the temp directory, it'll end up being called bind on the switch amp on the switch E with file context for that file. So there are rules that say certain applications creating files in certain directories get certain context. But the usual default rule is you get the context of the file from the directory you're in. What are the key components? We've mentioned several times the kernel. The kernel has been patched to run with SE Linux. The first patch that the NSA came out with was basically thrown out by the kernel developers because it didn't fit with the way they envisioned it. And basically was putting way too much SE Linux specific code into the kernel. So the kernel administrators basically said to the SE Linux team is, we want you to break out your policy decisions from your access control. So they came up with the concept of the Linux security module. So they allowed them to patch the kernel and put in everywhere there's an access control, they basically have a call out. So anytime there's an access control decision that has to be made, there's a call out into the LSM module. And then different vendors and security architectures could plug in LSM modules. The only major one that's been done so far is the SE Linux module, but there is other companies are starting to put out other LSM modules. The next major component of SE Linux is policy. And I'm basically going to talk about two slides, and this basically comes into the Fedora Core 2 versus the Fedora Core 3 policy. In Fedora Core 2, we came up with policy, strict policy. And this is the policy that's been developed by the NSA over many, many years. And this is most of the real security developers in the world are using strict policy. So strict policy is actually plugs right into the way SE Linux was developed. And these are my definitions. So I define a strict policy as a system where everything is denied by default. Okay? The only thing in a SE Linux system is an allow rule. So there is no deny rule, it's just allow rule. So if you think of firewalls, that's the usual example that people understand. And in a firewall, you basically shut down every single port, no processes are able to talk out to any port. And then you start opening up windows, allow rules in them. SE Linux was designed the same way. All daemons had minimal privileges. User space had minimal privileges. So basically, the entire file system, everything was controlled by SE Linux. The problem that we found when Fedora Core 2 came out is that it was difficult to enforce in a general purpose operating system. The problem is you guys want to change the system to look different than the way I want it to look. They took away my dictatorial powers to force you to run your system the way I wanted, and you basically caused me to lose many hours of sleep because we were up all hours of the day because everybody came in and said, you know what I want? I don't want it in a home directory, I want it in a symlink. So if I'm at home, the symlink points to my home directory. If I'm at work, my slash home points to my office directory. But not only that, but I have the key material. It's not going to be stored in my .gpg file. It's a symlink off into my USB port that's plugged into this device. Okay? So write the policy to make sure that's all okay. Okay? I didn't envision that you set it up that way. Just think of it, multiply that by hundreds of thousands of people. So basically we ended up with, I think we nearly ran out of bug space in Bugzilla, this space in Bugzilla, because the bugs just kept on pouring in and pouring in. From people trying to do what they've always been able to do with general purpose operating system. So we took a step back at that point, and we went back to some of the smarter guys at Red Hat and some of the smarter people that I've dealt with had said all along, we don't really want to totally control the operating system, or just secure the entire operating system. What we want to do is we have these entry points where people break in, right? You don't secure your entire house, you lock the doors. So where are the attacks coming from? Well, the attacks are coming from the internet. Okay, they're coming in from network applications. basically, you have these applications that are listening for incoming packets and people breaking into those doors. So we came up with the concept of targeted policy. And my definition, again, is targeted policy is sort of the inverse of strict policy. It's a system where everything is allowed, and then you use deny rules to lock the doors. So basically, your house is totally open, right? If you get inside your house, you have full control of your house, but you lock the doors. Well, SE Linux wasn't designed to do this. But what SE Linux does is it basically allows you to generate different types of rules databases. So you can actually define a rule that says, any process that runs under this domain can control the entire system, can do anything that you currently can do without SE Linux. Basically, if a process is running in this domain, it can do anything that you can do under the governance of discretionary access control. So if you're a user, you can do anything a user can do if you turn SE Linux off. So we wrote this domain, and it's called unconfined T. So if you guys running Fedora Core 3 process right now, you say ID minus Z, you'll see that your process is running under unconfined T. So unconfined processes now have the same access that they would have with SE Linux on or SE Linux off. But what we did is we took certain daemons and we defined those with the policy transition rule. So a transition rule means when the kernel sees a certain executable being started by a certain process, it transitions to a different domain. So what you have is you have your Apache domain down here. When the HTTP is started by the unconfined process, it transitions to HTTP D, and that domain is totally locked down. So that's what targeted policy is. Lastly, the third component of SE Linux is applications. Now, again, the number one thing in SE Linux is that most applications and server applications remain unchanged. Out of the 1,500 RPMs that affect SE Linux, that affect Fedora, there's 30 RPMs, I believe, that have SE Linux changes in them. And most of those SE Linux aware applications are things to allow you to look at the file context. So you want to be able to see what the file context is, so ls minus z, so the core utils has it. You want to be able to see what the process is running is, so ps minus capital Z. There's certain SE Linux, probably about 7 or 8 SE Linux RPMs, live SE Linux, things that allow you to do set and change file context, things that allow you to load and unload policy. Okay, then the logging programs, because you want to basically have people log in and they have to basically transition to a certain context. But overall, as I said, 30 out of 1,500 ain't too bad for which applications. We're going to talk a little bit about the Apache example. We're going to come back to this a couple of times. Basically, in Apache, you have the Apache executable totally unmodified. You know, right? You get any Apache application, put it on the system, and it's totally unmodified. There's not a line of SE Linux code in it. But you might have your administrator he really wants to have some flexibility in how he sets up the security, because Apache basically is almost an operating system in itself. And again, this is a rule that you guys envision ways of running Apache that I can't possibly guess. But basically, what we've added is we've added the power in SE Linux to basically allow you to have a few knobs on the SE Linux policy control to turn up and turn down your security levels. So you might want to have a highly secure Apache server, where basically Apache, the only thing it's allowed to do is read files in the var www.html and display them. Okay, and that would be basically the totally locked down Apache web server. So if you're only displaying pages, that's probably the way you want to run your Apache. A medium level, let it run CGI scripts. A low level would be allow it to read files off of the home directories. So basically these files in the home directories will be one specific directory structure, you know, public HTML. So we can lock it down. So you lock, basically adjust higher and lower the control. If a cracker or a hacker breaks into the system and they get full control over Apache, they get root access through Apache, the only thing they can do, depending on the level of your security, is if you're running a high-level security, the only thing that hacker is able to do is read those files. Okay, they can't touch your etc file system, they can't go and attack your user space or anything else. If you're even a low level, they can do that, they can run CGI scripts. Those CGI scripts can only do what Apache's allowed to do. Okay, and then they can, in low level, they can only be able to read what's in your public HTML directory. Now what they can do is they have full control over the Apache web server. So if they want to put up a you know a pornographic website, they can do that. If they want to redirect you, you know, they, depending on what the rules of what Apache can do, they have full capabilities of Apache. So what we've done is, again, the castle analogy, they've broken into one room and they have full control over that room. SELACE doesn't prevent that. This shows some of the main transitions and starts to show a couple of, and I know this is the user talk, but it shows basically how SE Linux transitions. And these are actual M4 macros that are basically the rules database and how they're written. But basically when the kernel first comes up, policy gets loaded by the init process. The init process loads it up and it tells the kernel that you're running as kernel_t. And then it loads in the rules database. And one of the first rules that it's going to hit is it says domain auto trans, which means that if I'm a domain, I'm going to automatically transition. So if I'm starting out as kernel T, and I hit a program, which is a file context of init exec T, I'm going to transition to init T. The init program starts up and basically transitions from init exec T, starts running as init T, and then it comes along and hits another rule that says domain auto trans init. Basically any file that's marked as init exec T, init RC exec T is going to run as init RC. Keeps on transitioning down to finally the named D starts up. And basically, when an init RC T hits a named D exec T, it's going to transition to named D. Now, this is a picture of strict policy. The same exact diagram when targeted would basically say unconfined T, unconfined T, unconfined T, oops, switch to named D T. Okay, so only at that point, and this is basically a whole rules database. Now, one of the things we're actually working on, we have targeted policy, we have strict policy, and then we have the policy for pelvis coming out. That's called MLS. Okay, and what that does is it totally locks down. That's the stuff that the top-level security people in the United States use. With Trusted Solaris. The Trusted Solaris is this last world where Sun can basically controls the market. Okay, they control the market of top-level security in the United States. Okay, because they have mandatory access control and multiple level security. And these are the rules that say that a general can look at this document, and he has this view, and a private has this view, and really it's far beyond what I understand. But basically, that's what Solaris are. Now, what Solaris sells that operating system for, each desktop is, or each server is $30,000 per server, and $1,000 per client, and huge, it's a huge revenue stream for Sun. Okay, guess what HP and IBM, they have nothing to sell in that market. So what HP and IBM want is they're desperate to take something like SE Linux, figure out a way to get MLS running on top of it, and to attack that market. So even at the top level security of the United States, you know, they're interested in open source. Also, of course, the NSA is very interested in this. Okay. So that's actually some of the next steps that are coming on. We talked about how do you configure, and this is some of the things that administrators would be able to do. The original version of SE Linux that came out said that, you want to configure your system, your SE Linux environment. Here's the source code installer. It'd be similar to saying, you want to change the way that you want to add a USB device. Here's the kernel. Just go rebuild some modules. Well, that's the way SE Linux first came out. One of the things we came up with is mechanisms for configuring it. We came up with a concept of booleans. What booleans are basically if then else statements inside a policy. And what they do is there's commands that allow you to configure the way the policy runs. So we talked earlier about Apache having access to certain, actually that's the next slide. But for instance, you might have a system that supports NFS home directories. Well, there's a bool that allowing NFS home directories really lowers the security of the system. So by default, we don't want to allow NFS home directories. But you can set a boolean that says that your system has it, so therefore you're going to support it. There's a file on disk that saves as boolean, so from reboot, there's basically about 25 or 30 booleans that you can set depending on your system's configured. You also have the ability to change certain file contexts. So you might have certain files that you want to run as an executable inside the Apache web server, so you can define, for instance, a certain file as being a CGI script. So you can configure your system to run in a different way depending on how you define it. Getting back to the Apache example, we talked a little bit, how would you use booleans for that? Your system administrator had multiple choices on how he wanted to configure the system. and he has booleans that allow him to do it. So we, one of the main booleans that we have is the ability to turn off SE Linux protection, but not for the entire operating system, right? In Fedora Core, there was certain breakages that said, I got to get this thing off, my system won't work. What we've done now is we basically have these targeted booleans, but we also have a boolean, we have targeted domains, but we have a boolean for each one of those targeted domains that allows you to turn it off. So if you have, the Apache web server from hell that we cannot easily figure out how to get running in an SE Linux environment, you can turn off transition and basically allow Apache to run as undefined T and have it. The second level is basically, this is a typo, but you have HTTP enabled CGI. So basically allow your Apache web server to run with CGI scripts. And then we also have the enable home directories. There's a couple of other ones. There's a GUI I'm going to show you that has these translated into nice strings. But basically these are the if then else statements that allow you to configure how you have it. Also in Apache, you have different scripts, different code that you want to run. You might have Squirrel Merrill installed. You might have different applications that you want your Apache web server to do. And there's all these file contexts that you can set, so you can define what's a script and what's content. And you can find that scripts can read certain content, and you can find certain directories that you want the scripts to be able to read, write. You can get basically real fine-grained control over the way you want your SE Linux HTTP environment or Apache environment to work. Out of the box, we turn most of these down. So we turn it to the lowest level security, again, with the goal being that you guys don't call me all the time saying how do you configure it. But basically what we want to do is once people get used to using SE Linux is, again, we're allowing them to crank up the security. Okay. So you could basically get to the point that you have one script on the machine, it's the only CGI script that's allowed to run, and you have it locked down. So even if there's another executable that the hacker breaks into your system and is able to start, he won't be allowed to run that CGI script. Again, Colin downstairs has written up a fabulous, if you guys want to play around with some of the Apache policy, there's a fabulous document that talks about how to configure it. It's linked here, so good. I think all the web pages of this whole presentation, by the way, is available on off of Fedora. Lastly, I wrote up a bunch of man pages. A bunch of man pages that you can basically, if you have a targeted domain, you basically add underscore SE Linux to the end of it. You can figure out what booleans, what file context is associated with it. So if you just say man HTTPD SE Linux. The one thing that I think Fedora really needs is more people to write documents. So I really speak the English language, even though it's my second language, C is my first. But anything we can get, if anybody wants to come in and clean up documents and help document the whole process, that's really what we're looking for. And especially in SE Linux, we need help. This is the system config security level. Which is the application that allows you to configure your firewall. We've added another tab to it, which is the SE Linux tab. And again, some people still want to turn SE Linux off altogether, so there's a little toggle here, allow you to reboot the system, and while you toggle this, you reboot the system, SE Linux is turned off. If you do turn SE Linux off, okay, so say you've got SE Linux, causing you problems, and you turn it off, and you reboot the machine, you do some stuff. Well, while you're doing stuff on the machine, you are not writing files under the proper context on the file system. So if you then decide later on you want to turn SE Linux back on, things are not going to work properly. The file system is not going to be labeled properly. One of the things you can do, the usual step, there's a magic file you can go and touch /.auto-relabel, and when you reboot the machine, the file system will get relabeled. You could also, there's also a script called fix files that you can run. Yep.
What's to stop an attacker from changing that flag and running reboot?
He's not going to be allowed by policy.
Policy keeps him from changing the flag if he's not on console or something like that, or?
No, we don't protect, we don't protect user space. If I'm able to sit down on the console and do something on the machine, right? Right now, targeted policy is protecting against network attacks. Under strict policy, you have rules about what people can log in. We're not protecting user space.
Okay.
So of. I'm able to touch the machine. And
that's well, I'm saying, right. If you SSH, then you don't have a policy that says you can change that
flag? I don't
have
any control over SSH. I'm not targeting SSH.
Okay.
What was the
SSH
tool?
What's it? System config security level. I think if you go, I don't know, it was under the, if you pull down, it's probably one of the documents. It's about security levels, change security levels.
There is something to use a band.
Anyways, what I wanted to get at when I talked about turning SE Linux off, sometimes you can have problems that you, well, we're the number one target right now. If something goes wrong in the system, there is a high SE Linux default, turn it off. Don't do that, okay? I really hate when people do that. You can turn off enforcing. Okay, when turning off enforcing basically puts SE Linux into a mode where basically it's just going to warn. And it'll fill up your log files with warnings if you're doing some evil stuff, or it did when you were running strict policy. But you can turn off SE Linux. So if you find that you're having a problem here, a piece of software, you say, it's going to be SE Linux, you can either bring up this GUI or you can type set enforce. So it's this command called set enforce space zero. That turns off SE Linux enforcement. Then try your application. If it's still broken, it ain't my fault. Okay, it's someone else's fault. Okay, so that's the way to get around. And if you do that, then the file context continue to get to write, so you don't have to end up having to relabel the file system.
Right. So on that line, if I have an application that I know has problems,
right,
running under the default, I can tell this not to enforce. Now, where do I look to figure out what it's warning me about and go backwards to figure out how I have to change my application or my policy?
Yeah, that's the next couple slides.
But oh,
basically it writes messages into your either file log messages or file log auditing if you've auditing to audit log, if you have auditing turned on. But basically it writes a thing called ABC messages, which is access something control. I don't know what the details are. Access vector control. Writes these really cryptic error messages we're about to show. We'll wait on that. The last, the next section on this screen is talking about policy type. Okay, one of the neat things that we've done is, neat things about SE Linux is basically it's just rules databases. So you can have multiple different types of rules databases installed on a machine. This is actually a pull-down menu. All it goes out and looks and sees what directories are stored in SE Linux. Wow. And then it puts that into this rules database. So there's two right now, there's targeted and strict. Both of those are available for Fedora Core. We're only shipping targeted for RHEL 4. Okay, if you want to get strict policy, you have to basically work with Red Hat Consulting or some other company's consulting trick, because it's, as soon as you get into strict policy or MLS, we're locking down your system. So we're not going to live, you're not going to be allowed to configure it in multiple different ways. And if you want to configure it in multiple different ways, you have to get an SE Linux person in there to write policy to allow it to run in a strict environment. So what this has the ability to do is it changes the policy. As soon as you change the policy, it writes that little secret file up to the slash directory auto relabel. Next time you reboot, it's going to relabel your entire file system to run. Obviously, under MLS, there's a lot more labels than there are under strict, and there's a lot more labels under strict than there are under targeted. This picture right here is a picture of your Booleans. Okay, and these have the nice translations, and these are all translated into 75 different languages by the little elves that come in and translate at night. That's what was the greatest thing when I first started working in Red Hat. You go home at night, come in the next day and you do it. Let me do a CVS update. And, all these files have changed. I always remember the fairy tale about the cobblers coming in. And, basically all these people are out there changing their code. And hopefully we get to the point with Fedora, I don't know if we ever could legally, where you guys come in and fix my bugs. And that's great. And that's the other great thing you do. You guys send in bugzillas. Here's a patch that fixes your bug. Coming out of the closed source world, that was, it was so great that all the people fixing my bugs. And then I take credit for it too. I do a lot of work. Sleeping last night. This is where you get into, I got this, CGI script that's not working. Something's not working. We had a squirrel mail the other day. Someone actually decided to check their spelling before they sent out a squirrel mail. So Fedora Core 3, they say, check mail doesn't work. I go in and basically my instant response is send me the ABC messages from your file log messages. And something like this comes to me, this is basically what you'll see in final log message. I'd have additional data on the front, but basically it's that you just search for the keyword ABC. And it's basically announcing that something was denied, in this case it was a read and write by this process. Obviously the cron job, some cron job tried to access the device dev null. It was not allowed to try to read and write to the dev null. It was running under this context, so it was a root system cron D, and that's the device that it tried to do. What you can do with that is there's a command called audit to allow that you can run against file log messages or pipe to it. And you'll end up with a rule like this, which is allow system cron D null device pair file read write. Okay, I have two things I can do with this. I can either change that allow rule to a don't audit, which is, you know, basically, I know, shut the hell up. And there's a lot of those. There's a lot of those in there because a lot of times applications are, you know, for instance, if you start up a shell script in particular directories, the first thing the shell script always does is it does a get adder of whatever directory you started the shell script from. So if you're in, I get ABC messages, a lot of people are in a highly secure directory and they, you know, they say, you know, what's Red Hat's current stock price? They run a little shell script to do it and they end up with an ABC message saying that Bash, which is the ones I really love, Bash tried to read, you know, a highly sensitive document. I don't know what the hell the use is that thing. But basically, there's certain applications that try to do it. Most daemons, they always try to access the TTY devices. And actually, I think that's what this one is. When a daemon comes up, it tries to talk to the TTY device when it first comes up. Well, we really don't want daemons talking to the TTY devices. Because with Unix, you have the ability to show characters and to pull characters out of TTY devices. So you could have your Apache daemon running, and if it still has access to the TTY device, they can put up a login prompt. What do all stupid users do when they see a login prompt? Enter the password. So basically, if you look at most of the daemons, they all have basically don't audit rules around. We don't give a crap about this. This daemon wants to talk to the TTY device, but it's going to get an access denied. Most of those daemons just ignore the access denied and they go on. So basically, you can start writing policy, make rules. There's an SE Linux conference coming up in a few weeks where we're going to have some, it's down in Washington, D.C., and we're going to have some training on that. I think Red Hat's going to start providing training on how to do SE Linux policy. And the goal is to basically start, you know, right now we have about 10 daemons in targeted policy. And Rawhide right now, there's probably about 30 or 40 of them out there. Starting to grow it, and then we're also starting to investigate how we can start moving the stuff into user space without having to have, you know, locking down user space to run the way I want them. This is a little bit further what policy rules look like. This is an example of a ping executable. You find a domain that the ping is going to run in, domain of what processes run under. This is a file context, so we'll find that ping executable is called ping exec t. Then we have a version of a boolean here. This boolean in a strict policy would say whether our users are allowed to ping or not. So the system administrator would have the choice of whether users are allowed to ping. And if users are, then it puts that rule that says unprivileged users, when they execute the ping executable, are able to transition to the ping domain. And we're allowing ping actually needs access to TTY devices, but it's not really any good unless it's able to display to the terminal device. So that basically allows users, the ping command, to put output to the user device. If you're running as the higher level root type person, this allows them to run ping. Your ping user shield library. So it's basically a whole bunch of macros around what the ping command can do. And if you went and looked at the entire database of rules and strict policy, it's somewhere around 30, 40, 50,000. I haven't done the count on it in a while. But basically, there's a huge explosion of rules available. And as you move up, targeted policy is a small amount of rules. Strict has a bigger amount, and MLS has a gigantic amount. Yep.
Is that
No, I wish it did. What audit allow would spit out is this. Okay? And the problem is that as new people writing policy, they end up with 400 rules. For instance, they have a network daemon. We have macros called can network client. So if you basically define that, that might define FOTI, allow rules for that. But someone writing policy for the first time obviously doesn't know about these. So there is new documents being written that explain what these bigger macros are to be able to use it. We have macros around, we define what it means to be a network daemon. So there's a thing called daemon domain. So as soon as you start writing policy, you would write, the first thing you'd write is a daemon domain. That might get you 20 of the rules, can fork, can sick child, things like that. But audit to allow will give you those basically lowest level rule ones. SE Linux futures. We're basically at our infancy of handling SE Linux. We're trying to get the community up to speed on it. Get rid of this image of how do I turn this thing off to the point of let's understand what's going on here. What are the problems that we're hitting? We're trying to move from targeted policy a little closer to strict policy. What can we protect? What additional things can we protect in the targets? So in FC4, there's going to be additional targets. We're going to go from 10 to probably 30 targets. And we're starting to look at things like protecting SSH and things like that. We're also looking at, and this is the latest one, if you guys are following the bugs that are coming in the SE Linux list, there's new controls being added to the kernel. The kernel, the tools guys are basically looking at this whole exec stack and exec mod changes, and basically it's looking for libraries that want to be able to write to memory, write and execute memory. So if you have a library that writes and executes memory, sort of like Java, okay, we want to lock those down. Okay, so that's the major way hackers break into systems, is they do a buffer overflow, they write a whole bunch of data in memory, and then they start executing it. Well, there's new rules in the kernel to protect against that. So the latest kernels that are in Rawhide right now have this executable fix, and we have to write rules about which ones are allowed to do that and which ones aren't. The problem is that a lot of sloppy code is out there. This is probably one of the best things about SE Linux. We find tons and tons of really stupid code. The best one we found was the kernel. The kernel opens up sockets, right? This drives me crazy. It's a Unix historical thing. I don't know how many people know this, but I didn't know it at the time. When I open up a socket inside of an application, and I execute it, it's basically just reading and writing to a file. Later on, somewhere else in the application, I do a fork and I do an exec. Okay? By default, that file descriptor is handed down to my child and handed on forever. The only way to stop that behavior is to call an fcontrol function to basically say close all my file descriptors on exec and close it down. Okay? Absolutely nobody writes code to do that. So we end up with a file descriptor that's opened up by the kernel. Usually it's around the init. And it's basically, at the time, it was a file descriptor to the init, dev init process. And we were finding Mozilla had tried to read and write this file descriptor. Now, a clever programmer could have taken the Mozilla application and basically written it via full writes and in a discretionary access control. He has full access, he has full ability to read and write to the file descriptor. So he can write a one to that and basically take the machine down. Okay, so. And that's just sloppy code. But it's not even something I've been programming for 20 years. I never even thought of a fork process has a file descriptor that, only a thing like SE Linux would basically say, hey, this sub-process, if it can figure out where that file descriptor is, has full capability of writing that file descriptor. Process exec. So you have this protection of exec. So what that's finding out for us is lots and lots of libraries that have sloppily written code, usually assembly language code, that is doing something in memory that's triggering this exec stack stuff. So it's either libraries that are happening or actual programs that happen. So we're actually going through and cleaning up. And when we have these, we're cleaning them up. But I basically have to turn off a boolean that says allow unconfined T to do this. What we'd like to get to the point is, even in a targeted domain, we'd like to get two different file contexts going. We have the unconfined executables, and then we have the unconfined executables that have to do exactly memory. So now we've locked down, allow all applications to run, but if they hit if it's an application that actually tries to change its memory, it's going to be denied. So we could define all the Java apps, which by its nature needs to be able to execute in memory. And we're able to lock down user space by doing that without having to change file context in the user space. So we can get to start doing that. Another place in user mode that we'd like to start locking down is we could have co-processes, say you fire up your Mozilla application that's running as undefined T. When it goes off and it takes a plugin type module, and that plugin is going to do some graphical work, you could basically start another process to do all that graphical work, and that process would be totally locked down, and then take the output back from that and put it on the screen. So we can start to just break out certain sections of user space where we think is likely to be break-ins, and start to protect user space without being so invasive that people don't want to turn their CLINs off. We want to get better controlling and networking. So we can take two SE Linux machines, this is sort of MLS. In an MLS world, you actually have one web browser, where if a general comes in looking at the web browser, he sees one view of the world. And if a private comes in, he sees a different world. This is all on named networking. So you take IPsec type protocols and you add file context or security context to it, and different people with different levels can look at different documents on the same Apache web server, and that's governed over the network. Better control of user space, I talked a little about that. This used to be called SEX, but we changed it to SEX. So it's a little more. But basically, one of the things X-Windows allows you to do is, X-Windows basically is a way, when we first sat down with the NSA and said, hey, we're interested in taking your technology and put it in it, and they say, great, our technology is all set. And so we told them, but we don't want to do it on servers, we want to do it on the workstation. And they were, we want to do it on laptops. And they said, wait a minute, you can't do this with X-Windows. Because just imagine you have a top security document. And you're sitting there reading the top security document, and then suddenly you bring up your web browser and you want to go out and find out if the Red Sox kicked the Yankees butt again last night. Okay, as soon as they fire up that web browser might have a nice flash plugin that fires up to show you, dancing girls in bikinis, which my son loves to have on his machines. But basically, as soon as that happens, you don't know what's happened. That X-Windows has full protocol that says that this application was allowed to talk to this X server. I can go over and look at my top secret, secure the security of Fallujah document and take it and send it out. Okay, so you basically have to lock down X Windows to get to MLS type security. So there's an effort in Trusted X, and I actually talked to Jim Geddes at Linux World and said, hey, are you guys really looking at this? And believe it or not, he said yes. So so basically they're looking to take SE Linux type controls and put them into X Windows. So that's coming in the future. And compartmentalized workstation, which is all totally locked in MLS, and that basically gets you to the point where different users logging into this machine have different views depending on which security clearance they have when they're locked in. Again, goes way over my head. Okay, that's, I don't know how I'm doing on time.
What was that? 5 minutes.
Five minutes. Basically, this is information on, we just shipped Red Hat Enterprise Linux 4 this week, which is basically has the same SE Linux that's available in Fedora Core 3. So if you want a supported platform, this is the one you want. At the Fedora pages, there's a nice SE Linux description on there. The FAQ is really good off of it, and that Apache page is available off of there. And the Apache document really, if you read through that, it really explains how to set up SE Linux. Most businesses, said earlier in the talk, most of you guys have SE Linux running on your machine, and hopefully, the best thing I always hear is, is it on? And as long as you haven't hit one of the targeted daemons, you're probably not even going to realize it. And hopefully, with the targeted daemon, the only targeted daemon that we hear about all the time is Apache, because Apache is this monstrosity that people figure. But I think we've done a fairly good job of locking that down to a degree where users can use it. And most people aren't coming up and screaming, how do I turn Apache off? Now, that said, we've already had 60, 70 patches policy since the Oracle 3 went out. But it's getting down to the point where it happens about once a week versus 3-4 times a day after we went out with the policy patch. So we're getting much better. Mailing list, there's a great mailing list. This is where all the real security weenies hang out. That's the NSA site. And basically, I monitor both of these, the Fedora SE Linux list, I think we're now up to three different chat rooms, public chat rooms on SE Linux. There's one that's just SE Linux, there's one that's Fedora SE Linux, and now there's one that's Rella SE Linux. Most of the SE Linux guys from Red Hat will be there, and in several cases there's other people. Size distributions, Fedora is basically brought to the mainstream, which I think is great. Gentoo has a full distribution, they have what they call hardened Gentoo, which is SE Linux with strict policy. But basically they have the ability kind of to lock people down, and they have a very small community. And then Debian has all the packages available. Suzy would say that they have SE Linux, all the components are there, but you have to, you know, change the kernel to boot for this way, and you know, go get the Fedora package and install it. But basically, they've taken all the components and put it in. I think Red Hat's led the way towards SE Linux. They're trying to differentiate themselves from us. Good luck to them. But basically, SE Linux is going across the community. And they said at the beginning of next month, there's an SE actually in it. The SE Linux symposium. I'm hoping we get. Somebody said it might be up to 1,000 people there. I'm sure it'll be mainly government people, but it should be interesting. So, any questions? Yep.
As I understand it, the policy basically shifts to the monolithic package.
Right.
Where if, say, I take a lightweight PD and package up Fedora extras, and I think it should have this targeted policy for this, and I write that policy, you know, assuming I know what I'm doing, mm-hmm. and I write the macros. What do I do with what I've written?
Okay, good question. One of the problems is that SE Linux is somewhat monolithic. There's a policy package and there's a policy sources package. And we've tried to make policy sources in such a way that if users do customizations to the policy sources file, those policy changes will get carried forward. So what you could do is you basically would require policy sources to be installed. You would put your changes from policy sources in there and recompile it up. That being said, there's development on compartmentalizing of the policy or basically allow sort of shared libraries of policy. That's being worked at by, there's a company called Crasis, who's sort of like their NSA's advanced development company. And they've worked on some of these leading technologies of shipping individual policies that can then get globbed in. So I think in the future we're going to have that type of stuff. The problem is that there's a chicken and the egg situation. No one's actually used that stuff yet, and until I put it into Fedora, this is the beauty of Fedora, is I can start taking some of this leading stuff and start staking it in, and hopefully I have it working by the time there's a Fedora ship, you know, kill everybody in Rawhide, and then eventually it works. So we're working towards that. One of the things I've been working on lately is SE Linux strict policy has this whole idea of roles. I didn't really go into that. You can have users running in different roles and have different security, somewhat similar to security clearance. But you can have roles that today I'm a printer administrator, and tomorrow, you know, now I switch and I switch to a different role and I'm going to be an administrator of the machine. And we've tried to avoid that. And even in strict policy, we're trying to avoid it because the user management. So we're starting to work on changing user management to be able to handle assigning users to different roles, and that also will get tied in with MLS.
So the policy, it seems right now that this sort of situation is that all the packages coming up Apache OPM, and then all the file permissions, there's one file permission for OPM, which understands, you know, okay, this should be mode 600, this is a whole separate
right.
distinct thing, that seems...
Yeah, the problem is that with such infancy at this point, we don't have shared libraries, okay? If we had policy shared libraries of these macros being defined, it would be easier, but yeah, right now it's all locked together. We're really babies of this, right? I mean, no one's ever tried to do this on a general purpose operating system. Everybody that's ever done this has basically, you know, been custom Solaris where they control everything. I think eventually, I'd like to get rid of M4 macros. I'd like to get to, you know, somebody in the open source community write a language for this stuff. You know, that's the way NSA wrote it. I mean, basically, the whole thing is a prototype that was, you know, I've been trying to squeeze into, you know, a product, and we need help from other developers. I've actually talked to, I mean, NSA funds different, you know, we've got together with MITRE, and MITRE has all these language experts, and they're off, you know, working on things that they consider important to the NSA, which is provability that if I have this domain and I have this file, is there any way through a matrix of programs for this domain to get to this application? And they have all these, you know, doctorates and real, you know, incredibly smart guys. And I feel like saying, I don't give a crap about that. What I'd like to do is have a language that, you know, a high level language, right? We're writing this whole thing in the equivalent of assembly language. I need C or C++ type language to write policy. And then we can get to the point of having shared libraries so that you could write, you know, this thing is sort of it's a network daemon, it's a, you know, these special files, these file contexts, and then you just ship that and plug it in. And I think 2 or 3 years from now we will have that, but right now, the best idea is you go on and write your policy, you send it to me, you send it upstream, we'll include it, you know, we'll roll it in. You know, so the Fedora model works real well for this, right? If you're protecting additional domains, then you can add it to policy. Where it becomes bad is this, that you have, you know, closed source companies and Oracle wants to write a special policy for something they have. We don't have a real good way for them plugging that in. Anybody else? Yeah.
Yeah, is it too ambitious to set a goal and say eliminate the group user altogether?
You should have gone to the stateless Linux side. That actually is what I'd like to do. I'd love to get rid of the whole idea of root user. At some point, you'll use. I think it's a laudable goal. You still have, at some point, even under the strict or MLS policy, you still have to have the ability to change the policy. Whoever has that ability ends up being approved. He has the ability to. The other thing we found is that we always wanted to find a domain for just the person who could change policy. But, and this is a problem with security we need in the world. As soon as we say, okay, we're going to write a policy that says this person is the only one allowed to change policy, and no one else in the world is able to. Everybody finds a back door that you can go and, I can use the fdisk command, I can go and, you know, change that, and I can have the tire backups, and at which point I'm like, oh, screw you, I don't care. It's the problem with security, everybody can always be fine. Yeah, security is a matter of raising the size of the fence, right? So, you know, we want to protect the Mexicans, it's, you know, we'll add the fence to be 6 feet this year, it'll be 8 feet next year, it'll be 12 feet, and it's always building the fence up. You can't ever get to the point of totally blocking the Mexicans across the Rio Grande. It's just how high can you build the fence to make it harder for them to do it.
The problem having so many different roles and when you control access to a role, you have a bunch of passwords for a role?
We don't have roles right now, so right now you have, right now changing roles is you have, in a strict policy using the traditional SC Linux from NSA, they have a command called new role, and what you have to do, you would basically want to physically change the role. So in that case, we wanted to know there was you doing it and not a program doing it. So when you did that command to change your role, you would basically have to enter your password. Now there was no reason for you to enter your password because we believe once you're authenticated, you are who you are, say you are, and we can govern your transition to different roles. What we can't necessarily govern is an application that you ran changing your role. So this is one of the things that I didn't put on the futures, one of the things that security, we're moving towards the operating system is this idea of trusted path. What trusted path basically means is that I know a human being told me to do this versus a piece of software. So how do you get to the point of knowing, you know, and the classic one is Control-Alt-Delete, and so, you know, Microsoft came up with that, that's a trusted path and that bypasses the entire operating system and hits the ground. So if I could basically get up to a trusted X Windows system where I have a little square down at the bottom right-hand corner, that is a trusted path with the kernel and X Windows and everything. The kernel basically maps that area, and if he sees the mouse moving to that area plus a button click, then that's a trusted path down to the system saying, I want to change my role right now. And that's the only way you can get to a trusted role without a user having to re-enter the password. If but roles aren't necessarily, you as a user can change your role, sort of like groups, right? You can change your group depending on your activity. What we want to do is make sure a piece of software isn't changing your role. So it's you saying you want to change your role. Anybody else? Okay.
Go sign keys.
Huh?
Go sign keys.
Sign keys, yeah.